89.1 KANW presents Concerning New Mexico with George Armijo.
This is Michael Brasher for George Armijo. This morning on KANW's Concerning New Mexico, we have a congressional debate for candidates of District Number 1, recorded yesterday at Congregation Albert, featuring candidates Deborah Holland, Janice Arnold-Jones, and Lloyd Princeton. The moderator is Chris Schuler.
Welcome, everyone, to our congressional debate today at the beautiful Congregation Albert in the Northeast Heights of Albuquerque. And welcome to our listeners on 89.1 KANW. I'm Chris Schuler. It's an honor and pleasure to be moderating the debate today. I'm going to go over the debate format very quickly so we save plenty of time for questions. We're going to have opening statements of 2 minutes each. Each question then will be asked to every candidate. The candidates will be allowed up to 90 seconds to respond, and then we will come back and touch on each candidate, and they'll be allowed 60 seconds for a second reply after all the candidates have given their first reply. Closing statements will be 2 minutes each, and the order will be reversed from the opening statements. The order of speaking is determined by a coin toss that happened during lunch today. So let me introduce our candidates, and we can do polite applause for each one. That would be great. And let me say, it's not easy to run for office. If you've not done it, you haven't experienced life. It is a full-time consuming operation, as I know you all know. But first, let's give them all a round of applause for their dedication. I'd like to introduce our first candidate, Lloyd Princeton. He's the Libertarian candidate. He's an entrepreneur with a national recruiting practice. His centrist approach reinforces private enterprise while providing a safety net for those in need and stimulus that nurtures self-sufficiency. Princeton believes in encouraging people to take initiative and to become what they can be. He firmly believes in individuals being part of the solution, not just the government. Lloyd Princeton. Deb Holland is the Democratic candidate. She is the former chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico and the first Native American woman to chair a major state party. Holland is a member of the Pueblo of Laguna. She graduated from the University of New Mexico and the University of New Mexico Law School. She has served as chairwoman of the Laguna Development Corporation and is a former tribal administrator. Holland has spent her life advocating for the underrepresented and advancing progressive values. Deb Holland. And our third candidate for this congressional district is Janice Arnold-Jones. She's the Republican candidate and is a former four-term state representative from Albuquerque District 24, having served on the Taxation and Revenue and the Voters and Elections Committees. Arnold-Jones was appointed in April 2013 to fill a vacant seat on the Albuquerque City Council. She is a graduate of the University of New Mexico and a former small business owner. Arnold-Jones believes that while New Mexicans don't agree on everything, we are all united in our love and concern for our families and community and have a strong desire for a prosperous New Mexico and America. Janice Arnold-Jones. And now we'll have our opening statements, and we will begin with Lloyd Princeton.
Great. Good morning. Yes, I am Lloyd Princeton, and I think it's very befitting that our last public debate is in a house of worship. In fact, if I wasn't here right now, I'd be at my parish, All Saints and St. Michael's, over on 4th and Montaño. And, you know, I think there's been so many issues. I've learned how much I have not known in studying the issues and talking with my constituents. But when I try to tie it all together, I think what I really see has been a lack of faith. And faith in ourselves, faith in our communities. You know, things have shifted from when I was a child. There was a time when, you know, my neighbors could scold me and my parents thanked them. You know, I know when I came home from school, I was studying, and if I wasn't studying, my father was in my face. You know, there's been a shift today. Maybe technology plays a role in it, where people have become very self-centered, and you know, there's less community. There's less people going to church. There's less people involved in their community centers and boards and neighborhood boards. And I think that's the problem. You know, it's very easy to say that the problem is on the outside, but you know, the problem is on the inside. The problem starts with community. And in this case, a lack of it. You know, people sitting here today, you've taken the time because you actually care about your community. This is just a small percentage. And the reason that I have been running is because I want to bring a return. I want us to work together. You know, there's an interesting article recently that talked about the shift in Democrat values in the last 50 years. It went from civil rights and equality for all and prosperity for all to now identity politics. There's a lot of anger out there. I think we need to start to dispel that and get rid of it and bring us back together. There's a great little quote I saw in last Sunday's comics, because I love the comics. It said, "We're all just walking home together." Don't you think it's time we do that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Princeton. And now our opening statement from Janice Arnold-Jones.
Good morning, and thank you to Congregation Albert and the Brotherhood. I was counting, and I believe that you have done in excess of 25 congressional debates since 1960. Well done, well done. I'm Janice Arnold-Jones. I am a Navy wife, a mom, a soccer coach, a loyal Albuquerque High School Bulldog. In 1963, my dad was killed testing a B-57 bomber. My mom, newly widowed, believed that New Mexico, with its remarkable mix of people, held opportunity for her children, and she was right. I grabbed hold of that opportunity, became a successful businesswoman with over 30 years private sector experience, including 12 years as a contractor to Sandia National Labs. I did serve 8 years in the State House of Representatives and also on the City Council. You know, serving in Congress is about more than protests. It's about principles, policy, judgment, and the financial, mathematical decisions that make a difference in our lives and in our futures. I am ready to tackle the massive issues we are facing with national security, tax policy, health care, jobs, crime, immigration, the environment, and the debt. I have a proven record of listening to and working with New Mexicans. But more importantly, I have the experience and the passion to do what's right. I'm Janice Arnold-Jones, and I'm asking for your vote.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold-Jones. And now, Deb Holland.
Thank you so much, and thank you all so much for being here this morning. My name is Deb Holland. I'm the Democratic nominee for Congress in the 1st District. And Congress has never heard a voice like mine because we've never had a Native American woman in Congress in over 240 years. I'm a single mom. I know what it's like to rely on food stamps. I know what it's like to sit with a sick child, holding a sick child in a waiting room for 3 hours. Both my daughter and I graduated from APS. I'm a Hornet, by the way. We both graduated from UNM. We're both paying off our student loans. I was a small businesswoman here in Albuquerque. I owned my small business for 11 years. I was a tribal administrator at the Pueblo of San Felipe. And I ran a service provider for mentally disabled adults. In this era, we need new strong voices to go to Congress to fight for the things that New Mexicans need and deserve, like fighting climate change and moving our state into a renewable energy economy, to making sure that every New Mexican has health care, to making sure that our public schools can help all of our students to be successful, and that includes an early childhood education. I am that voice. I've lived New Mexico values. I would appreciate having your vote on November 6th, and if you can vote early, all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. We appreciate all three of you being here. We're going to start with the easy questions. This about poverty and homelessness. And as one of our question people were giving us questions, and then a committee put together these questions and handed them to me. One of them pointed out that one-third of Manzano High School students are homeless. One-third of that high school is homeless. So what is your plan to battle the poverty and homelessness problems, including funding to services to combat and prevent for the next generations? And we'll start with Lloyd Princeton.
Great, thank you. So when I was volunteering in Santa Fe at a homeless shelter, one of the things that struck me the most was that, with the exception, I think, of one conversation, almost everybody had mental health issues. And when I think about the woman named Tammy, who lives outside the Loma Linda Community Center here, and when I've been talking to her, walking my dog in the morning, she's very charming, but in the conversation, I learned that she's not making a conscious decision as to why she chooses to stay on the street. She doesn't want to be in a homeless shelter. Mental health is, I think, the number one issue. And the way that we're trying to tackle that now is by, A, being able to provide 24-hour facilities so that people can come in at any time when they need it the most, and also have facilities that have all of the services that are available to them there, whether it be legal services, shelter, mental health, drug rehabilitation. We need to address all those issues at once, and we're already starting to do that in Albuquerque. We're passing, there's a bond measure for that. You know, we've already had facilities open downtown. We're working in that direction. That, in conjunction with continued outreach, actually going to the streets, finding them, and encouraging them in, together as a joint effort, will go ahead and help start resolving the problem. Thank you.
And just a reminder for our audience, we're going to be doing 90 seconds each. We'll be rotating the questions through, so you'll each start separately. And then you'll come back with another 60 seconds. So now I would like to move to Deb Holland.
Thank you so much. Yes, there is no question that homelessness is an issue. I pass by the 12th Street Bridge every day on my way home, and I understand that. Some of you who have seen my ad have heard me say that I'm 30 years sober, and there's not a day that goes by that I don't realize that I could have been one of those people living under that bridge. And but for the love and support of my community, I was able to put myself through college, put myself through law school, find a path forward, and that gives me the heart to reach out to other people to make sure that we're doing everything we can in our community to give people an opportunity. There's a lot of long-term solutions. I mentioned one in my opening statement about education, making sure that our kids have a successful public school education so that they can go on to further their educations. Additionally, healthcare is also an issue. If you suffer from, you know, a health issue, break your ankle or leg, you can't show up to work, you can't get a paycheck, you can't pay your rent, those are things that cause homelessness. So in the long term, we need to be working to make sure that we can provide people with those safety nets to make sure that their next paycheck isn't taken up by something other than putting a roof over their family's heads. So yes, there are several things we need to be concerned about in the near future. That's the census, to make sure we are counting our homeless people and making sure that they can register to vote.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Ms. Arnold-Jones?
You know, this is actually a local question, although there is a part that Congress will have a role in. And so first let me say that I believe that the solution is more economic opportunity, more jobs in our community. And right now, our economy is starting to explode, and we have people who are saying, please come work for me, but we do have a skill set problem. So there are lots of ways to address this, but let me go to the local level. One of the problems that happened in our country probably 30 years ago is we closed all of our tenements, all of our low-income housing. We're paying for that price right this minute. And while I am not an advocate of the government doing too many things, but there's a time that it's practical. I'm not a fan of the tiny houses only because I think if we're talking dignity, you need plumbing. And so we need to look at low-income housing that is more transitional, but it needs to be substantive. Both of my colleagues have mentioned mental health. There's no doubt about it that is a key component. One of my frustrations on the city council was going out on the street and talking to people who simply said, I know their services, I don't want to be there because I don't want to live by those rules. I don't know quite what we're going to do about it, but I want to give you a warning. If we do not fix this and soon, our water systems are in jeopardy because of it's the obvious.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold-Jones. And Mr. Princeton, 60 seconds.
Sure. You know, this problem has been a long time in the creation. I think, you know, Ronald Reagan, way back when, closed a lot of the mental health facilities starting back in California, and that has created a trend of mental health problems today. We've got lots of prisons to incarcerate people, but we do not have a lot of mental health institutions to actually help them. So when we address the mental health issue, when we address drug rehabilitation, and yes, when we address skill-up centers so people can actually be qualified for the jobs that are available to them today, then we will start, you know, changing the trend from homelessness. Thank you.
Ms. Holland.
Yes. Echo the sentiment about our behavioral health system. We have suffered that issue right here in New Mexico because of our current governor overturning or wreaking havoc on our behavioral health system. So I realize that that is definitely a place where we can make some inroads. Additionally, of course, we just need to make sure that safety nets are there for people so that they don't find themselves in a terrible predicament and that they can stay on track with their providing for their families.
Thank you very much. Ms. Arnold-Jones?
And I'll complete that thought. As long as we have so many people on the streets and we have no public restrooms, it is as bad as not ever cleaning up your dog parks. I'll let that go as it is. It's a risk. We have to face it. But I do want to talk about rehab. You know, most of our rehab programs are only 30 days. It's very clear that that is not sufficient. And I would propose and go to bat for converting the facility in Estancia that has 200 beds to a six-month rehab facility, because we need to be much more proactive about this issue.
Thank you all very much. We're going to move to our next question, and Deb Holland will start the answers to this. Again, you'll have 90 seconds, and then we'll follow up with 60 seconds. Our New Mexico economy is struggling, one of the worst performing in the country. What will you do to create a positive business atmosphere here in New Mexico?
Thank you so much. In my campaign, I have been very adamant about us creating a renewable energy economy, because I really feel that that's the direction that we should go, not just as a state, but as a country. In a state that has 310 days of sun per year, it doesn't make sense that we aren't using our natural resources to create jobs for people. And that can happen right here in District 1. I went for a balloon ride during the balloon festival, and you know, there's a lot of flat roofs around Albuquerque, and all I thought about was, imagine if there were solar panels on every single one of these roofs, how much we could be curbing our carbon emissions from going into the atmosphere, but also creating that economy for our state. So that's definitely one thing. As a former small business owner, we need to absolutely support our small businesses in any way we possibly can. That's the backbone of our local economy. And also, I've talked a great deal about supporting our small farmers here in District 1. I spoke to a small farmer in the North Valley during my primary election campaign. She lost on a USDA grant to Del Monte, the big corporation Del Monte. And I think that instead of helping out the big corporations who actually can afford to expand and do the things they want, that we should be helping our small farmers, and that's what we can do.
Thank you very much. Janice Arnold-Jones, what would you do to create a positive business atmosphere here in New Mexico?
Well, again, I'm going to divide the question, because most of this is a local question. But here's the national side. Bloomberg says we're the fifth hottest economy in the country right now. Much of that is due to the Permian Basin, but the other credit goes to the tax cuts. And when I see small businesses saying, I need to hire people, I can expand, that is a good thing. We need to keep that trend going. But there are other things that can be done locally. One thing is, our business climate in the state of New Mexico tends to say, well, no, you can't do that. When you go to the rest of the country, the first thing they say, well, yes, I think you can do that. It's an attitude. It is time for us to get off this and just decide that we need to grow a little bit so that our children have opportunities, that there are jobs to be here and jobs to come back to. But that is really a state attitude. And while I'm fussing, I tell you what, if we don't fix the permitting and zoning and inspection issues in the city of Albuquerque, you will see me on a bully pulpit just standing there saying, wait a minute, if you want safety inspections, you have to have the people, you got to do it, and you can't hold people up for a day or 6 weeks. We cannot do that any longer, but it's an attitude. But again, I want to go back to, from a national perspective, the tax cuts are helping us. Let's move it forward.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold-Jones. Lloyd Princeton, how would you create a positive business atmosphere here in New Mexico?
We need to keep working with what we already have in place. Listen, recently our governor started the direction of passing occupational licensing reform. That's critical for the small business success so that people can actually get jobs in a readily manner, not have to spend several thousand hours to get them. This also helps our returning veterans. But you know, we have numerous programs in place. You know, we have the Catalyst Fund, which, you know, provides seed money to businesses that want to start out. We have innovation vouchers, competitive grants for technology businesses. Sandia Labs has their entrepreneurship exploration program, which encourages the use of their technologies in commercial ventures. Talent ABQ, it takes people and assesses their skills and then matches them up with employers that do not require college degrees. And if they're lacking on a skill, they take them to a skill up center to get them jobs. We have what we need. We do not need to recreate the wheel. We don't need Washington to do something. But to Janice's point, if we do need some support from Washington, then we need a block grant. We just need a little bit of seed money. But we have things going on. And the Local Economic Development Act, the LEDA, has brought us Netflix. We have what we need. This isn't a mystery, and we're already doing it. It just doesn't feel like it because we're so used to being last, and we're used to feeling apathetic. And I'm here to tell you, we're doing it now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 60 seconds for rebuttal. Deb Holland.
Thank you so much. Look, Albuquerque, New Mexico, can be the tech capital of the Southwest. We were told that by a small business tech owner here in Albuquerque who feels that if we continue to build up our infrastructure, that gives opportunities to so many of those businesses right here in our city and our state. Additionally, I have been very outspoken about our need to support education, having educational opportunities for our people. It's, you know, there's a lot of folks who would really love to further their education, but they can't afford it. We need to make sure that people have opportunities to further their education, even if they can't afford it. We're talking about the future of our state. We're talking about the future of our country. And also, I would just like to say that there has been survey after survey and article after article that talks about the Republican tax cuts not paying for themselves.
Thank you very much. A rebuttal, 60 seconds, Janice Arnold-Jones.
Just a couple of more things that the federal government can actually accomplish for you. One is, there are a whole bunch of things that we've been doing, included in the renewable sector, that makes us almost 100% dependent upon China or India. I say enough. We take it back. We do it. And that means mining the rare earths that we have been blessed with in this state. In addition, another really troublesome problem, it's connectivity in our state. I have been fussing about this since about 2008. We have more dark fiber than anybody in the nation, and I can't make a phone call from Vaughan to Roswell or Algodones to Albuquerque. Let's fix it. And I don't want to say that's all federal government, because we got a little PRC issue, but the federal government has their fingers in it, and I think I can help fix it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Princeton.
Hey, once again, we're already doing it. You know, I feel that, you know, saying that it's all or nothing with education, that there's education we can't afford, is a soundbite. CNM is taking a leadership role in this state, and you can go for $55 a semester unit. I'd hardly say that's gouging. CNM also offers tremendous apprenticeship programs so that people can actually go into jobs and have jobs in technology in all sectors. CNM has also collaborated with New Mexico Tech. They're doing the DART initiative to promote New Mexico as the most value-based state to create software. We're doing it. And if you want to talk about climate change, here's one. The federal government needs to upgrade the electric grid. It's a 30-year process. $500 billion, 600 to 900,000 jobs per year. And we have a $20 million grant at CNM to NMSU, I apologize, to go ahead and explore the best way to do it. We've got it going on already. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate 90 seconds and 60 seconds is a really short period of time to answer the world's problems. And we appreciate your working at it so we can get as much in as we can and we get a good feel for what your thoughts are on this. Our next one, we're going to start with Janice Arnold-Jones. Again, you'll have 90 seconds for the first response. This is about border issues. Everyone is talking about the separation of children from parents at the border and how it can affect their psyche for the rest of their lives. What can and should Congress do to reunite all these children who have been separated from their parents at the border?
Okay, so kind of a confusing question. Are we going to talk border security? Are we going to talk immigration? And Chris, with all respect, I think we're talking immigration. Our immigration policy has been kicked down the road since the Reagan era. It's time to fix it. It's broken. When we had so many asylees, so many children coming across the border unaccompanied, we quite frankly didn't have enough housing. But there were others, and it created a very unfortunate situation. Nobody wants to see children and parents separated. But the Ninth District Court said they couldn't stay there. We didn't have housing. So we need to take a fresh look. I am ready to go to Congress because it's not just children at the border. It is so much more than that. We don't have a functioning worker visa program. We can use some biometrics so that we can qualify people on their side of the border and yet use that biometric, you know, use your thumbprint to come and go. Technology that's old, but it's reliable. Our visa program alone, we don't track who comes into our country. We don't track who leaves. We can do that. And yet when I think about the PhD students at New Mexico Tech who would like to stay and they can't get their visas renewed, we have a lot of problems. It is time for Congress to take this up. And I'm asking you to send me there because it's huge.
Thank you very much, Mr. Princeton. What can and should Congress do to reunite the children who have been separated from their families?
Everything my colleague just said. In addition to that, it is, you know, Congress's responsibility to adhere to our country's laws. And so, you know, nobody wants to separate. And the question was, you know, separating children from their families. But, you know, Janice is correct. You know, there are laws which our agencies are following. And, you know, it is our responsibility to secure our borders. But to that avail, right, comprehensive immigration reform is necessary. Here's an interesting fact. 90% of home health care workers, people taking care of our grandparents and the elderly, are immigrants. We need immigrants. We do need a liberal work visa program. We also need immediate and major immigration reform. We need to have a merit-based system, much like Canada's, where we can take people's qualifications and language abilities and education abilities and ability to work into consideration and welcome them in. And for anyone else, we can certainly have a surety bond program where, you know, them or a sponsoring agency can put down some money to secure their application while they're coming into our country. You know, we need these people. We are a nation of immigrants. My father was an immigrant. You know, but on the flip side, though, the idea that people are going to rush our borders and, you know, and then it becomes our problem. Yes, it has created a problem, and we're doing the best we can to solve it.
Thank you very much. Ms. Holland?
Thank you so much. Well, first, I think that when the Democrats win back the U.S. House, that we can order hearings on the policies that put us in this predicament to begin with. We never should have started separating children from their parents on the border. I don't think there's anyone in this room who could watch the news and not cry in front of the TV when we saw those children crying while they were taking their parents away. But it's not unlike what they have put our immigrant community through for a very long time. We need to order hearings on this issue. It was my understanding that there was no plan to reunite those children when they started taking them away in the first place. And this is a serious issue. And as a mother, my daughter's 24 now. Thankfully, she never experienced being ripped away from my arms. But I can't imagine if she had, she would still be suffering today. So we have to do everything we can to hold this administration accountable for implementing that policy in the first place. And of course, what we need really is a comprehensive immigration policy. We should be ensuring that people, if they want to come to this country, giving them the opportunity to not make it a 20-year process and $50,000 or $100,000 just to get it done.
A second response, 60 seconds, Janice Arnold-Jones.
I would say, so this is a real tough one. The Ninth Court said, you may not keep children in an adult facility after 20 days. What would you like the president to do to go against the Ninth Circuit Court? That's where we were, we had a housing problem. I don't think any American wants to see children separated from their parents unfairly or unduly. And I'm hoping that we've gotten the problem solved, but I want to circle back around because we started with borders, and I want to just comment on the fact that we are a nation of laws. We are a nation that is entitled to borders, and however you secure those borders, be it a wall, be it technology, we have a right to know who is in our country and to the safety of secure borders.
Mr. Princeton, 60 seconds.
You know, absolutely, and I think, you know, I would caution you, because before you think if the Democrats are going to take back the House, these would be the same Democrats, oh, and Republicans that could have fixed our immigration policies decades ago. So what's different this time? Why is it going to be any different now? And I'd actually like to draw your attention to something that is much more personal and much more local to us. Our own CYFD does not have enough foster parents or adoptive parents to handle the children of our own state. And yet we're getting tossed this immigration and all the images of children being, you know, stolen away from arms. This is a smokescreen. We need to start focusing on the local problems right here in New Mexico. And yes, deal compassionately with immigration. But I'd like you to hold accountable the two parties that have not fixed it. And ask yourselves, how are they going to do it differently this time? Perhaps it's time for a third voice, a different voice, not beholden to the broken two-party system, who can actually fix immigration.
Thank you, Mr. Princeton. And Deb Holland.
Thank you so much. I think this time around will be different. If you've read the news, you know that there is a large number of women of color who will win their seats in Congress this time around, and I believe that with more women in Congress that they will get the job done. Yes, we are a nation of laws. We have to protect our borders, but we can do that in a humanitarian way. We don't have to have racist immigration policies to protect our borders and make our country feel safe. So I am for a comprehensive immigration policy. I want us to, if people want to come to this country, I want us to have a country that we would be proud to have people want to be citizens of. So humanitarianism, 100%, that's what we should be seeking to in our immigration policies in our country.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. And now we'll start this one with Mr. Princeton. We're going to go easy on you this time. What would you do to combat climate change, and is it man-made?
Great question. Sure. You know, the climate is changing, and man has a very heavy hand in that. And there's a lot of things that we can do. For starters, here within the state, you know, the oil and gas industry should build a methane pipeline. We need to capture that, you know, A, for economic, but also for climate purposes. Point one, we need to also embrace, you know, natural gas more. Natural gas burns almost 50%, releases less CO2 than oil does, and it brings our state a great deal of money. We need to continue with our solar energy technology and the improvement of it. In the last 5 years, solar technology, the cost of it has dropped 64% and will continue to do so. But one of the things that we can also do is embrace community solar. For people who can't put solar on their roofs or don't have it, they can still benefit from those panels around them within the community. That's important. We also need to continue to invest in NET, negative emission technology. It's new, but it's forthcoming and it's progressive. We need to pay attention to things like that. You know, we can do this. It was a very interesting thing, especially being here today. I attended a presentation from the New Mexico Interfaith Power and Light, and it was on climate change. And they talked about needing a cultural revolution. We all need to be part of this solution, and we need to get together as a community, and we need to work on poverty, and we need to work on all of the issues that are facing us, because then that will help influence climate change. It's not just legislation, it's a community effort.
Deb Holland, is climate change man-made, and how would you combat this?
Yes, climate change is man-made. Yes, we pour millions and millions and millions of tons of carbon into our atmosphere every single day. And there's no denying that. If you read the science, you can't deny it. And that is my opinion on climate change. What would I do? I have been in my campaigns, the environment has been my number one issue because I care deeply about it. I'm a lifelong environmentalist. And I came that way because of my parents. My dad was raised on a farm. My mom comes from an agricultural tradition with the Pueblo Indians. And we realize how important land and water is to the future of all of our communities. So this is what I would do. I would definitely work to stop this administration from selling off our public lands, because I think that gives an opportunity for the fossil fuel industry to buy up those lands and start drilling on them. I do not want fracking in our backyards. I don't want fracking on sacred lands of the Indians at all, anywhere in our country. And I also believe that we need to move forward on a comprehensive infrastructure plan that includes renewable energy across our country that is completely heavy on renewable energy. We need a renewable energy revolution in our country.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold-Jones, is climate change man-made, and what would you do to combat it?
I think climate change is. I think man contributes, and there is a big difference. So what can we do? So I'm going to first throw out to you that there are things that happen in our world that you have no control over, and the amount of carbon emissions you can't even count. And those are the number of volcanoes and other things that have happened. We can't control that, but there's a lot of other things that we can control. And one of the things that we can do, and I will compliment Deb, because I do believe that one of the things we have led the way with is sustainable farming. And I'm watching what is happening because, you know, we can't move anymore to grow land on more places at all. And so what our farmers have done is figured out how to do more with less and be more efficient. One of the keys to conservation. Our conservation of water is another key. And I look again at the farming community that has figured out how to recycle water more times, more successfully than any other industry. It's a great place to start. But I would challenge Deb on the issue of public lands and balance. You know, we can say we're going to have a renewable economy. So do you want to have jobs as well? How quickly do you want to do this? The timeline makes a difference. And if you say we're going to have a renewable, 100% renewable economy next year, you're going to give up 150,000 jobs.
Thank you very much. Mr. Princeton, 60 seconds.
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing that's of critical importance right now here in New Mexico, but across the country, is our forestry management. Forestry management better taken care of will actually help conserve water, in addition to minimizing fires, and we already know what a scourge that's been across the U.S. We also can deal with our agriculture better. We can start using our grazing lands. We can improve things on how we maintain those lands as well. And then also I think it's really important if we are transitioning, and as we transition over to a renewable economy, we need to replace the revenue from oil and gas. You know, over almost $800 million this year came from oil and gas, not to mention the $1.2 billion surplus. So it's great to say, I want 100% of this, but we got to replace that, and we have to replace those jobs. It just doesn't all happen in a vacuum, and we need to work at it. And yes, timeline is critical to this. We can do it, but once again, we're talking cultural revolution. We're all going to be responsible for the input on this.
Deb Holland, 60 seconds.
Thank you so much. Yes, I just feel like this is the issue of our time. Climate change is the issue of our time. If you haven't spoken to an Alaska Native who says, my village will be underwater in 10 years, if you haven't spoken to someone like that and realized the urgency in someone's voice who is living in a place like that, it's extremely disturbing to know that there are people around our world, and they're actually the people who are living in the worst poverty who are going to experience the worst of climate change. And so I want to be a voice for those people. And here in the Southwest, we will have extreme droughts moving in if we don't do something about this. That recent report that came out that says we have 22 years to before it's too late. I believe in science, and I'm going to go to Congress to be the voice and continue to be that voice for science.
Janice Arnold-Jones.
All right, let me take this in a slightly different direction. You know, we're talking about climate change, but what it really affects is our access to energy and power, the ability to do work. So we do have some possibilities. Now I'm going to throw one out that we've talked about for years, but you know that the Mississippi Delta floods every year. Is it time to start thinking about a pipeline to put water where we need water? I think we should talk about that. Let's talk about Tres Amigas over outside of Clovis. We talked a little bit about renewables. Well, if renewables are being produced here but they can't get anywhere, so what? But we have a very fragile electrical grid. We need a third interconnect. We've started building it in a place called Tres Amigas. I will do everything I can in Congress to make sure it's complete, because at the end of the day, one of the things that makes this country as successful as it is access to energy to do work.
Thank you very much. This next question, we will be starting with Deb Holland. And the question is, what do you think the role of the United States should be regarding conflicts in the Middle East? In 90 seconds.
Well, of course, the U.S. should be a role model for diplomacy around the world. And currently, this administration has cut and cut and cut the State Department. And there are fewer diplomats around the world than at any time in our history. And so I feel that that is definitely something that needs to be championed, essentially. So I don't think there's a way for the United States to go anywhere and sort of, you know, be the savior or fight our way out of anything, but we need to ensure that diplomacy is our number one issue moving forward, that we are doing everything we can to bring that to the world. That's what we're known for. We're losing it quickly with this administration, and I would like to see us quit defunding the State Department and making sure that we can have a diplomatic common sense around the world.
Thank you very much. Janice Arnold-Jones.
I was visiting with Global Ties not long ago, and they reminded me that the budget for diplomatic efforts has remained level, but please don't let it fall below this level. But the question is, what should the U.S. do with conflicts in the Middle East? And first and foremost, our first response should be diplomatic. It should be diplomatic. If we get very specific, we have friends. Israel is our friend. We have been there. When they are threatened, I think we need to stand up and say, we got your back. But I want to just go over a slightly different range and go over to Mr. Khashoggi. If you ask my opinion, are the Saudis our friends? They are our allies. I do not believe they have been our friends in years. That is my opinion. But in Congress, all I will be able to do is to support the State Department and the Department of Defense, who will have the on-the-ground information, and I will certainly do that.
Mr. Princeton.
As with all issues, a very complex issue. Yes, friends, allies, you know, do we want to be the world's police force? Maybe that's the bigger question. You know, all of this comes at an expense. One of the reasons that we have retained our global economic power is because we have the most powerful Navy in the world, because we can essentially insert ourselves wherever we want to be, maintain trade routes, maintain commerce. At the end of the day, that's what it's about. The Middle East, it's about oil. It's about money. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. So I ask you, and these are decisions for you to make, do you want to be the world's police force, or do you want to be a humanitarian aid? Do you want your sons and daughters to go off to war in maybe different 80 different countries where we don't have a direct threat and come back broken and then have problems here at home? You know, do you want us to keep funding these additional military excursions with our deficit spending? Or would you rather we fix the local problems here? Would you rather we help the CYFD? We can't have it all. The problem is that we're trying to. So, you know, the Middle East absolutely needs our support, but I question where we put our ground troops. And at the point, at, you know, it's the difference between national security and interference. And I think the U.S. has an excellent, long, rich history of interfering in other countries' business.
Deb Holland, 60 seconds.
Thank you so much. So, yes, diplomacy, I stand by that again. If we're talking about, you know, wanting to pay for the, now it's, I believe, $2 trillion tax cuts that this administration gave to folks who don't actually need it at the expense of paying for that with other things like our State Department or our Medicaid or our Medicare or our earned benefits programs that acts as a safety net for people in our country. I just believe that we can afford to do things that we need to in this country if everyone pays their fair share, and I stand by the fact that the U.S. needs to lead on diplomacy.
Janice Arnold-Jones.
It's a slightly different tact here. You know, we have led through a concept of peace through strength. We have a strong military that we need to continue to support. But when we talk about diplomacy, one of the things that compromises us is how badly do we need another country? Let us take Afghanistan as an example. Have we used Afghanistan for their rare earths or China? When we have rare earths, I'm an advocate for trade that is fair. But I do not want this nation to be dependent on any nation for anything, which is why I am so pleased with what is happening in the Permian Basin. We are now the third largest producer in the country, seventh in the nation. I do not want to be dependent upon the Middle East for oil or power or anything else, but I'm happy to trade with them.
Mr. Princeton.
So, you know, once again, it's important to remember that Congress has abdicated its responsibilities. It's Congress's responsibility to declare war. It's also Congress's responsibility to deal with foreign commerce, and they're letting the president do it. Congress needs to retain those powers, and it needs to actually do its job. It's critical. And by the way, we're all benefiting from the tax cuts, not just the rich. You know, everyone benefits because, remember, when jobs are more prosperous, we have jobs, we actually earn money from it. You know, it's a great soundbite to make this the rich against the poor, but it's not about that. I think the real question is how do we lift the poor up? How do we help them become self-sufficient and give them the tools? We absolutely want a safety net. What we have is a safety cage. We've locked them in, and that's what we need to undo. So yeah, I think focusing on foreign policy is great, but we have a lot of internal issues that we're not fixing, and that's what I want to focus on, particularly here in New Mexico.
So many questions, so little time. We're going to give you one more question each. There will be no rebuttal. It's just going to be 60 seconds. You're going to give us your best shot in 60 seconds. And we're going to start with Janice Arnold-Jones. If elected, how can you bring the country together rather than promoting tribalistic divisions?
That is a really good question. So here's my approach to that. You have to, as leaders, believe that A, you don't know everything, and B, that you're willing to listen to everybody. And you have to do that actively. It is not good enough to think that just your team has all of the answers. My favorite Navy guy in the back is want to remind me that what you see depends on where you sit. And where you sit, you will see a different perspective. If you do not honor that perspective, I promise you, you will get a half-baked solution. And I'm tired of it. I am tired of half-baked solutions. Let us work together. Let us listen to one another, because those perspectives make a difference. It is the difference between a 30-foot view and the details on the ground.
Mr. Princeton.
If the two parties were going to cooperate, They would be. We wouldn't be so polarized as a nation with so much anger. I think anger actually is the new policy. You know, no one's really listening to each other, and we should believe that now all of a sudden it's going to change. Remember, one of my favorite quotes, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. So you're going to elect a Republican or a Democrat, but this time it's going to be different. How about electing a libertarian? How about a third-party voice, someone who's not beholden to the two parties, who can actually go in and build coalitions with both sides based on the actual issues that are pertinent to New Mexico? I've self-funded my race, which means I'm not beholden to a party or to any special interests, which means I can do the right thing for you. I think it's time for a change. And we're not going to dismantle the two-party system. We're going to dilute it a little bit, give it a little flavor and a little character and a little, you know, something, some context, and say, hey, New Mexico, we want different things.
Ms. Holland?
Thank you so much. Well, first of all, building relationships is a quality that I have. I think that's one of my most important qualities, and that's how I have had opportunities to be successful at every job that I've had. So I think that we need to continue, that I will continue to do that, that I will find ways, things that we can agree on to move our country forward. I was speaking to a woman earlier this morning, and she talked about two Jewish values that are present in this community. One is tzedekah, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, that's charity, and takum alum, which is to repair the earth. And I feel like those speak to what I am trying to do. I feel like it, coming from a community where, yes, we shared everything. We farmed, the food was shared with everyone. We made sure that our entire community was sustainable, not just one family. So I think that if we work together, we'll be able to accomplish that.
Thank you all so much. I know to answer in 90 seconds and 60 seconds is an impossible task, but we appreciate your efforts and your being honest with us and straightforward in your views and your ideas and your thoughts. We're going to be going to the closing statements now. You'll each have 2 minutes to wrap up your final views and ideas and thoughts for this audience and for our listeners on 89.1. Deb Holland.
Thank you so much. Again, thank you all so much for taking the time to be here today. I wanted to draw a parallel between the Jewish community and between the Native American community. You might know that in 1948, when the State of Israel was formed, Native Americans got the right to vote right here in New Mexico, and that was due to Miguel Trujillo, who was a veteran, a Marine Corps veteran, came back to New Mexico, realized he couldn't vote, sued the state of New Mexico for our right to vote. As a Native American, I feel like the oppression that our communities have suffered along with the Jewish community makes us natural allies, fighting for the things that we know that every human deserves, not just in this district, our state, but across our country and our entire world, that we should be working every day to make sure that we're moving those humanitarian efforts forward, that we can bring people into this process, give people a voice who haven't had one before. I promise you that I will work extremely hard in Congress, not for your issues, for all of our issues, to make sure that we're moving forward for the people of New Mexico. I would appreciate having your vote on November 6th, but I would really like for you to vote early if you can do that. My name is Deb Holland. I'm the Democratic nominee for Congress in District 1. Thank you so much.
And now Janice Arnold-Jones, the Republican candidate.
Again, I want to thank Congregation Albert and the Brotherhood for taking time to invest in this election. A dear friend of all of ours, Governor Dave Cargo, I just believe he would be very pleased at what's happening today. You know, going to Congress is truly about more than protests. It's about principles, policy, judgment, and math that makes a difference in your life and in our future. I am ready to take on the big issues that are facing our country. You know, my friend Deb says that nobody's heard a voice like hers in Congress. Well, in the real world, we all know that there are lots of voices in Congress, very much like this, that want to control your life, undermine the Constitution, give you a greater tax burden. Those are things that we do not need. We need people to go to Congress to actually do the work. Do you know, I have served. I am now asking you for the privilege to go to Congress. I have the experience. I have the passion to do what's right. I'm Janice Arnold Jones. I'm asking for your vote and the privilege to represent you in Congress.
And now the Libertarian candidate, Lloyd Princeton.
Thank you. Thank you for spending your morning here, to people in the sanctuary as well as our radio listeners. Gosh, so many issues, highly complex. You know, when I look at what's happened in the two-party system, it's the reason why I switched from being a Democrat to a Libertarian, because I realized it was simply time for change. And what I see out there right now, which is really, it's hurtful and it's the most troubling of all, is the identity politics. This isn't about American Indians, it's not about women. Or in order to honor them, do we have to, what about the white male? Are we bad all of a sudden? You know, as a gay man, am I bad all of a sudden? Because there's all this, it's all this political identity and anger. How is that working together? I don't see it and I don't understand it. We need to do something differently now. And that's exactly why I'm running as a third voice, but for all the voices, so that I can actually do the right thing. You know, and we have a history of not doing the right thing. You know, look at the Native Americans. We granted them a degree of sovereignty, but then we don't fund them properly. You know, we control people. You know, we talk about charity, but what we've done is create dependency. I know people who get EBT and they can't get off of it because they make $1 too much, they lose that. We've got them in shackles. No, this is a broken system, and I really want to do the right thing. That's why I've taken the time to run, and why I'm asking you to be brave and vote for a third party. Ignore the polls, ignore what you hear. Take a risk. Let New Mexico be historic. Let it be the state that elected a Libertarian to Congress, and so that instead of going, oh, gee, how's New Mexico going to vote? Republican, Democrat, check. We got that down. They're going to go, God, how's New Mexico going to vote? It's going to be a different vote. We don't know which way Lloyd's going to go. He may go based on the issue, and it may not be what we want, but we're going to need to go talk to him. I'll put New Mexico on the map and on the forefront. I'm asking for your trust. I won't let you down. Thank you. I'm Lloyd Princeton.
I mentioned at the beginning of the debate that it is not easy to run for office. It is very difficult. We appreciate all three of you taking the time and effort and energy and the time away from your families and traveling and these kinds of things to spend time with us and let us know what you think. You're going to represent us, and we think it's really important to get to know you. Let's give one more round of applause to all three candidates for a great job. We also want to thank Congregation Albert and the Brotherhood for their wonderful support. And also 89.1 KANW for broadcasting tomorrow morning. Thank you very much. And it is so important that all of us participate. We become involved, and above all, we go to vote. We must go to vote. Get your friends and neighbors, help them get to the polls. Early voting is now open. I'm Chris Schuler. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to a candidate debate with candidates for New Mexico's Congressional District Number 1, featuring candidates Deborah Holland, Janice Arnold-Jones, and Lloyd Princeton. Chris Schuler was the moderator. The debate was recorded at Congregation Albert.
You've been listening to Concerning New Mexico with Georgia Armijo on 89.1 KANW, New Mexico Public Radio.